Well, good morning. Welcome, everybody. It's great to have Rob here in the flesh.
Yeah.
You look so much better in the flesh than you do in the, on Skype. Well, it's great to have you, Rob. And it's been a real delight and pleasure to spend the last few days in the scriptures with you. So, we're in part 8 now of Salvation is Not by Association. We're going to get back into some of the material here that we've been going through. And in this series, we've been looking at associations, haven't we? And relationships. Associations that people in general associate with deliverance, which we know is in fact salvation. Ultimately, salvation is deliverance. And we know in fact that it's deliverance from the second death, but also in our everyday life, it's deliverance from the power of sin. Yeah. So I want us today to kind of expand our view on the term salvation. And I think we've been doing that over the last few weeks, understanding that it's a much broader term than possibly we've thought in the past. Because the word actually does mean deliverance. You should now have a very clear view of redemption and salvation in all of our minds. We should all have a clear view on that. And we've started to see that it's only by our association with Jesus Christ that we will ever see the full salvation, the full deliverance to come. The deliverance of all time. That's ultimately what our main goal is in life, is to enter into his kingdom. That's how it comes about. That's how salvation comes about, is in its fulfillment, is our entrance into that kingdom. It's the truth of graceful obedience. We're going to be seeing that over the next few weeks. And by the way, that's why it will be a few. Because the many actually think obedience is optional. The many don't have obedience front and center in their lives. It's a secondary thing. And last week we saw Jesus, remember in John 8, when we saw Jesus confronting those Jews who had believed in him with their sin. He was confronting them with their sin. And as I thought about this record this week and I reviewed it, I realized that not once did these Jews who had believed in him ever give any recognition to their sin. Never once give any recognition to their sin. Does that ring any bells with any of us? People continuing to sin but not recognizing that it is sin. All we have to do is look around our lives. Because do you see a lot of recognition of sin in your life? Do you? If you and I confront sin, it's probably the first time that's ever been done to somebody. And it's even more so with the religious in life. Just try that out. Try confronting sin to the religious in life. Because they're being taught they have the righteousness of Jesus Christ right now. And their sin has been taken care of through the cross. And we know how difficult that can be at times to confront that sin. And then, you know, one of the first things the Jews who had believed in him did then was point at what they thought was Jesus' sin. Does that ring any bells for any of us? You know, that he was born in fornication. So you better get ready for that in life the minute you start confronting sin. Yeah? It gets flipped around and you become the sinner. Now, I went back into John 8 and I counted the number of times the word sin or sins were used in that whole chapter. 8 times! Jesus wasn't giving them any room for any ambiguity in terms of what he was talking about. 8 times! They didn't recognize it once. They gave no recognition to their sin, not even once. Because virtually any time we speak up against sin, the people around our lives will not recognize the sin firstly. I think that's what we learned from John 8. And we've seen it right here in our assembly. When we've confronted sin, we end up being the ones being told that we are not acting in love, that we are sinning. And what happens is they discount the sin of the sinner and focus on what you're doing in confronting the sin and accuse you of being the sinner. Some things never change. Some things never change. So today, I want to expand our view of the associations people make to receive deliverance, right? And the subtitle today, by the way, is Association to Pools. P-O-O-L-S. Association to Pools. Now, it's okay, it'll become clear. So did you bring your swimming gear? It could be a hard swim, this, against the, you know, the popular tide. We may end up feeling like we're swimming upstream today. But look, go to John 5. That's where we're going to go. John 5. So John chapter 5, verse 1. We're going to start there. And after these things, there was a feast of the Jews. Now, the minute you say, first word is what? After. So you got to read before, yeah, to figure out what things were going on. So after these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool. I told you it was going to get, that title was going to work out for you. Yeah. There was in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five portices or five colonnades. Yeah. These are just colonnades, the large pillared open constructions around this pool. And I'll leave a link for you in the notes. You can look into that and understand a bit more about it. So this is the scene where Jesus turns up now. Now, do you think it's by accident he turns up here? We're going to see it's not by accident. I don't believe there's anything he did by accident. Yeah. And we'll see that in a minute. That is certainly not by accident. So first of all, we have to understand the scene. This facility that had been built around this pool was a huge, large construction where the sick gathered on a consistent basis and was in fact made to protect them from the sun, from the extreme heat in that part of the world. So this is where everybody berthed up, yeah, for extended periods of time for their deliverance. And that's going to be important for us to understand the motives of these people, why they were there. Because I'm going to tie that together. And as I say, the link will show you, give you some idea of the size of these, as they were often huge sheltered structures. So these colonnades were built, as I say, to give shade from the intense heat for these people. So when the next verse says, in these lay a multitude, right? In these lay a multitude. You know, there had to be hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, in this scene, yeah, that Jesus turns up to. So you got that picture, right? Important for us to set the scene for these things, because we can read over the scriptures really quickly and not understand the complete scene that Jesus was walking into. So this was the, quote, go-to place for healing deliverance. So think about our culture today. Where do people go for deliverance? Where do many people go for salvation? Right? That's the analogy that I want us to keep the forefront of our minds as Jesus walks into this scene here. So these colonnades were built for the long term because they knew that the sick would need them long term. And we're going to see why. And not least because we're going to see that despite the volume of people lining up for healing, for deliverance, we'll see the deliverance only came to the first one who makes it into the pool. It's really key for us to keep that in the forefront of our minds. So do you have any idea of the investment that was made? Any idea of the investment that was made around the pool of Bethesda? It was a huge investment made. So this was the mega church of the day. Yeah, this is where they all gathered, right? Hundreds, if not thousands of people. But they had a hope. What was the hope? The hope was healing deliverance, which for the majority of people was a false hope. Are you keeping the analogy of the religious systems of our day? For the majority, it was a false hope. And we're going to see that. So this place is high profile. Can you imagine it? It had to be a center of activity for a lot of the city of Jerusalem, where if there was hundreds and possibly thousands of people going there for deliverance and healing deliverance. So on top of that, look what's happening here. Look at verse 3. In these lay a multitude. You got it? In these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered. Now, the rest of that section, right down to the end of verse 4, you can scratch out of your Bible. Put a line through it. Go into that in a little bit of detail. Ignore verse 4, as virtually all earlier manuscripts don't have that verse 4 in this section. And the weight of evidence seems to point it was added to give credibility to verse 7, which we're going to get to. Yeah, and I'll leave a link in the notes for you to look at that in a little bit more detail. But let me read from the link that I'm going to send you, or will be in the notes, I should say. So quoting here on this paper on this particular section, quote, it seems that some Christian copyists unfamiliar with the cult of Asapius and the pool of Bethesda affiliation with it, right? So we've got an unfamiliar cult connected with this pool at Bethesda. A lot of people are very unfamiliar with this. They added the explanation about an angel of the Lord stirring up the waters in an attempt to clarify things for his readers. All our earlier manuscripts omit this verse. While trying to keep his readers, the scribe unfortunately sent all subsequent generations of readers in the wrong interpretive direction, missing the whole point of the story. The stirring up of the water was part of a ceremony when the priests of this cult, Asapius Temple, opened the connecting pipes between the higher and the lower portions of the pool. So you had a higher portion of the pool and you had a lower portion of the pool, and between the two were pipes. Yeah, you got it? So the water in the upper reservoir would flow into the lower portion of the pool, but a 4th to 5th century Christian scribe would not know that. This is an excellent illustration of the importance of recapturing a 1st century Jewish perspective on the scriptures, but truth be told, this is just a tip of the iceberg. So as I say, I'll leave the link in there for you to look at it. And it's got a great picture in there of the Pool of Bethesda with the colonnades around it. Yeah, to give you some perspective of what Jesus is walking into here. So these hundreds, if not thousands, this multitude of sick people are all waiting for some healing deliverance. But like so much of disease in that day, they don't know when it's coming. Yeah, it wasn't like today where we get something wrong with us and we just go to the ER or go to the doctor and get a pill. Boom. Hopefully that illness leaves us. Yeah, it wasn't like that in these places. Hence, 5 crowded colonnades of individuals. I mean, we catch diseases today that would be fatal in virtually no time at all if it wasn't for the medication that we take. Some of us know that personally. But now, just watch how Jesus brings about the deliverance, salvation here in this situation. Watch when he enters this whole scene. As he walks into it, just look at how he handles the people. It's fantastic. And verse 5. A man was there who had been ill for 38 years. Did you catch that? 38 years. A few of us in here aren't even that old. So this guy has been ill, debilitating disease, for longer than you've lived. Some of you. And that should really hit us. That should really hit us. And the way I look at it is, boy, how desperate was this guy for healing? We're going to see how desperate he was. Because have you ever had a debilitating disease for 38 years? Most of us haven't. So this guy's laying down, and by most of the evidence here, he's been laying down for decades. So if you're laying flat, horizontal, what's your view of life? How do you view life? Because you're looking at people's ankles most of the time. You're seldom looking at anybody in the eye. So it's really important to start to build the perspective this guy has. And we're going to see it comes floating through in his discussion and his interaction with Jesus, just what his perspective was. So everything in his life was the viewpoint of being horizontal. Yeah? Not vertical, right? His whole view of life was horizontal. I've been lying here 38 years. Man, I need this deliverance. And do you know what his conversations would be on the horizontal for the majority of the time? He's surrounded by other people laying around him. So their conversation is on the horizontal level. Yeah? And I want us to look at this pool of Bethesda as a trap. Because we're going to see it is a trap. And I'm using this analogy for the religious systems of this world being a trap for people. Yeah. Because today we've also built a whole culture of religious traps for people. Places where people go for truth. Places where people go for healing, deliverance, salvation. And they attend these places where they hear leadership overstating, overpromising, and under-delivering. Constantly. Because so often we know that what they're hearing is lies. Is that a trap or what? What they're hearing for the most part is lies. Have you ever heard the lie, when you die, your immortal soul floats to heaven to be with Jesus and the angels and all the relations who have died? That's lies. So these places that people go for their deliverance are the religious traps of this world. They really are. But you know, for the most part, it's the elephant in the church. Yeah. We use the phrase elephant in the room, but this is the elephant in the church. Nobody wants to address it, even when they see it. I've often said many times, you cannot build faith on a lie. So what we are seeing is counterfeit. It's counterfeit faith. If it's built on a lie, it is not faith. And we've really got to come to terms with that. And I think it takes time to come to terms with it, but we've got to do it. And we've all experienced this. We're all witnesses as to the Bethesda trap pools in life. And we know they're dangerous traps, which are pointing people to what? The wide gate of destruction. It's called that for a reason. But despite all of us in here being delivered from these traps, we can actually still get deceived by them. Some of us in here recently, one person recently, listed off the traps that she was involved in. Remember that? A list of them. Of what I look at as a list of deliverance to get the hell out of them. And it's only when we come to the truth of the scriptures and the truth of the kingdom and the truth of our obedience being the route into that kingdom that we get that deliverance or have any prospects of getting that deliverance. Yeah? Because it wasn't until you and I heard the truth of the gospel that that deliverance came about. And we can all testify to that. Because remember this verse, you don't need to turn to it, Matthew 1:21. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. He's saving us from our sins. Because there's a cost attached to sin. And you can look up Titus 2:14. I'm going to read it quickly here, which just when I read that, Matthew 1:21 today, I thought, man, you've got to read this out. Listen to Titus 2:14. Who gave himself for us to redeem us from every lawless deed and to purify for himself a people for his own possession, zealous for good deeds. You tell me obedience isn't important? It's central to our lives. Obedience is central to our deliverance, our healing deliverance. Our salvation, our deliverance is in fact from our sin. You see that? Because it's as we die to our sin that it qualifies us to enter into his kingdom. But it's by grace that we're able to do it. That's why we can't take any credit for it. So despite us seeing these places as traps, we still can be very easily deceived. We can be passive about it. Yeah, and I don't want us to be passive about it. Jesus never was. We're going to see this record about the response the religious systems of this world gave to this deliverance. So the scene is set here, isn't it? There are hundreds of desperate people who are ill, turning up to these colonnades and parking themselves up for deliverance, laying down and looking for a miracle. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Yeah? We've got hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of people doing that today. It's Sunday, if you haven't figured it out. There's one across the street. There's a trap across the street. One virtually on every street corner you go to, here in this city anyway, and most cities around the world. Yeah. Kind of gives you a different perspective when you look at them as traps. You ever seen a mouse trap? Or at least the old ones anyway. They've probably got new ones now that kill with lasers. But we're surrounded by Bethesdas. And that's why the next thing Jesus says here sounds totally crazy to us. Listen up to how Jesus handles this guy. Remember now, 38 years. That's hard to get your head around. That really challenges me to get my head around that. This guy had been ill. 38 years with a horizontal perspective of life. Yeah? You gotta feel sorry for this guy. Now just watch how Jesus handles him. Jesus handles this guy just the way he should be handled. Watch it now. Verse 6. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition. You're no kidding. 38 years. So Jesus knew when he walked up to this man, who again is horizontal, yeah, he's lying on the ground. Jesus knew this guy had a long-term disability. Before he ever asks the question that he's about to ask, he already knew that. So just watch how this develops. And he said to him, now, we read over these words, and we sometimes don't really take a mental note of it. He what? He said to him. So he's just speaking. He's not bringing any lotions, any tablets. He's just talking to the guy. And he said to him, do you wish to get well? What? Are you kidding me? I'm 38 years I've been lying horizontal, and you're asking me, do I want to get well? What the heck was Jesus thinking here when he spoke to this guy? Remember, Jesus already knows he's been in this condition for 38 years. But what does he ask him? Hey, do you want to get better? So we can't assume when people have been ill for years and decades that they actually want to get well. Jesus didn't make that assumption. He wants to see what response he gets. And what do you think the people around about were saying? Or thinking? Yeah, what a stupid question. Is this Jesus guy joking? You know, 38 years, we've seen this guy. We're sick of seeing this guy. He should be out of here years ago. Now, you would have thought, having been ill with this debilitating disease for 38 years, this guy would have bitten Jesus' hand off, wouldn't you? If you've been sick and ill for 38 years and somebody says, hey, I've got a solution for this. Do you want to get better? Wow. You'd have no hesitation. Would you? I wouldn't. So he's been waiting for this deliverance for 38 years. Jesus walks along and says, hey, do you want it? Do you want to get well? Just look at what happens next. It gives us great insight into how these traps can really condition people. Do you understand that most of the time when we're talking to particularly religious people, they have been conditioned, just like this guy. Look at verse 7. The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I am coming, another steps down before me." Did you catch that? He didn't bite his hand off, did he? This guy's been so conditioned by the Bethesda trap pool and the people around it, so much so that he couldn't see any deliverance outside of that pool. Does that ring any bells for any of us when we talk to so many people? Yeah. Remember the scene? He's surrounded by sick people here. Yeah. Do you know what sick people talk about most of the time? Sickness. I was in hospital a year or so ago with a heart issue, and man, the conversation was all about heart conditions. Yeah. And boy, try and turn the conversation around in these places. Nobody wants to talk about anything else. Oh, this is my condition. I've had it for X amount of years. This is what I've done. This is the amount of operations I've had. Oh, you've had a triple bypass? Oh, I've had quadruple bypass. It's almost like a competition. Yeah. Because what happens is people get conditioned by their context of life. And that's what happens in these traps. This guy's conditioned. He's had 38 years of it. Of conditioning. So let's read verse 7 again. The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I'm coming, another steps down before me." So this guy then, what's he doing? He starts to explain to Jesus, who just offered him what? Healing. What have you been waiting for 38 years? I've offered you. But what does he do? He starts to talk to him about the whole healing process that's wrapped up in the Bethesda pool trap. "Oh no, Jesus, you don't understand. I don't get deliverance by you saying anything to me. I get deliverance when I get into that pool quickly. And the reason I'm not getting the deliverance is I'm short of resources. I don't have the infrastructure. I don't have people helping me." You see the way he deflected. What did Jesus say? "Do you want to get well?" He wasn't wanting a rundown on his shortage of resources and why the Bethesda pool wasn't giving him deliverance. That's what happens with so many people. And that was the reason he gave for him being ill for so long. Yeah. Wow. He couldn't think outside of his pool. Yeah. He couldn't go beyond the pool, beyond the trap, and was surrounded by people just like this. And what immediately comes to mind for me is, are the people we declare the delivering power of the gospel to, and they start to try and persuade us with their church pool, their system, yeah, their trap is really where the deliverance really lies, despite them not seeing it for themselves. I mean, Rob's here. He's been around a whole pile of pools. Yeah? His skin's getting wrinkly. But we were all like that. We tried out so many pools and they never brought deliverance. Why? Because most of them are teaching lies. There's no other way to put it. It really isn't. And it's interesting that when you do offer this deliverance, whether it be healing, physical deliverance, or ultimately the deliverance of salvation into the kingdom, mm-hmm. Yeah, they decide to stick with something that has never given them any deliverance. I met a guy the other day, and I discussed the scriptures with him, and he said, "Oh yeah, I've been going to church." He might have been 38. He was in his mid-30s anyway, right? Oh yeah, I've been in church since I've been 7 years of age. Been in the youth leadership, gone through it all, and I'm still lost. Wow. Now you think, I'm still lost, I should be looking for somewhere else. Wouldn't you? You know what he said to me the next breath? I will never leave this church. Figure that one out. And when you figure it out, give me a call. I won't be holding my breath. So the reality is, what this guy needs to do is move away from his pull, isn't it? Actually, that's the deliverance he's going to get. It's when he moves away from it. And we're going to see he does just that. And a fantastic deliverance he gets. Now remember the scene, right? The Son of God is standing in front of him.
Yeah.
He's only looking at his ankles at this point. But the Son of God is standing in front of him. The deliverer. The healer of all time. Yeah? And he's standing there saying, no, the issue is, Jesus, I don't have enough people around me to get me in the pool. He didn't say, Jesus, how are you going to do that? How are you going to heal me? And his first words out of his mouth should have been, yes. Thank you. I will bite your hand off. But it wasn't, right? Because he was focused on the false promise of the pool. He'd been so conditioned that this is where the deliverance was that he couldn't see beyond it, despite it staring him right in the face. So these pools in life keep promising and don't ever deliver. Did you hear that? They're for the most part satanic. And we will see that in the scriptures. God's already told us that. But we get so deceived by sincerity, and I've dealt with sincerity before, because boy, if there's something that'll bring us all down, it's sincerity. It really will. But look at verse 8. Look at verse 8. Jesus what? Said to him. Underline that in your Bible. This is all Jesus is doing. In fact, if you go to chapter 4, latter part of chapter 4, you'll see him doing virtually the same thing. He spoke healing into somebody's life. Do you realize that's what we do when we declare the gospel of the kingdom? Yeah? We're speaking healing into people's lives. And it's going to be very dependent on what response you get when you do it, whether you realize somebody's called or not. So Jesus said to him, he didn't say to him, oh, I've got a whole bunch of disciples, they'll help you in the pool. I'll get you the resources. No, he said to him, get up, pick up your pallet and walk. Get up and pick up. That's what Jesus told him to do. Now, bear in mind, this guy's been 38 years conditioned that he ain't picking up nothing. Right? And he sure ain't picking himself up. Oh no, Jesus, you know, this has been 38 years, you know, I'm used to this now. I've got so used to this that when you turn up, I don't even answer your question, do I want to get healed? Wow. You ever met somebody like this? I have. And I'm sure you have. But you don't see Jesus here negotiating with a guy, do you? He said, if you want to get your deliverance, you have to get moving away from your own pool. The pool's not even in sight, is it? Jesus is not saying, oh no, hey, hold on, you've got the wrong perspective. Let me tell you about this pool. No, he says, get up and pick up. Guys, that's what we have to tell people. Yeah, at times, in certain situations. Because the pools that these people are committed to are actually killing them.
Yeah.
This guy had not listened to the words of Jesus, because the great thing about this guy, he actually did what Jesus asked him to do. Yeah. But what if he hadn't? What if he had just said, laid there, said, "No, Jesus, you're asking me to do the impossible. I'm going to lay here for another 38 years. And we're going to see this guy surrounded by people who wanted him to do just that. Yeah, he's going to get confronted with them in a minute. Right? Look at verse 9. Immediately. Not 38 years, right? Because remember, this guy had been there 38 years waiting, yeah, for healing, either here or somewhere else, yeah? Immediately. So no time has transpired, yeah? The man became well. And what did he do? The impossible. Picked up his pallet and began to walk. Hold on. Now, it was the Sabbath day on that day. Did that make a difference? Did he not get his healing because it was the Sabbath day? No. It just happened to be the Sabbath day. Do you think that was by accident? I don't think so. I don't think anything Jesus ever did was by accident. Look at verse 10. So the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, here they come. Here's a trap, guys. Hold on. What are you doing? Picking up your pallet and walking. It's the Sabbath day, for goodness sake. And it's not permissible for you to carry your pallet. Oh yeah? Can you imagine what that guy thought and went through that guy's mind? It's okay for you. I've been lying on this thing for 38 years. I'm so happy to be carrying my pallet out of this place. So what was the trap system saying? Yeah? Sit down, put down your pallet, and conform to the system. Yeah? It's exactly what they do. Yeah? Exactly what they do. But did you catch, though, that they never mentioned his healing? Oh my goodness, you've been ill with this sickness for 38 years. Hallelujah! Fantastic! Let's have a feast. Well, let's celebrate. You've been healed. No, get back in the trap. Unbelievable. So the minute this guy got the deliverance, here comes another pull system, right? It's the same for you and I so often in life. And it's to enslave him. Yeah. He's just got delivered immediately. And they want to enslave him again. Yeah. And the same so often happens to us. No sooner have you come to your miracle in life than the world tries to slap us down. And some of us have had it directly with our family and friends. Yeah. I saw a quote recently, I'll read it to you. You will face your greatest opposition when you are closest to your greatest miracle. There's a bit of truth in that. Yeah. Have you ever had any persecution before you started becoming intolerant to sin? There's a good question for you. I know the answer already. You never did. Did you ever have anybody up against you going to church as long as you are tolerant to sin? Guarantee you didn't. The minute you become intolerant to sin, that's when the opposition comes. Saw in the life of John the Baptist, you see it in the life of Jesus Christ, and in fact you see it in every record in the scriptures of anybody who does it. There's a clue there. You ain't going to get off with it, right? Because, you know, if John the Baptist hadn't been intolerant to sin, he may have had a much longer life, don't you think? But he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm totally intolerant to sin. and I'm willing to lose my life over it. Wow. Because you know what most people say? Oh, sin? Oh, that's okay. You'll get over it. You're allowed a little bit of sin. It's in your nature. No, it ain't. Now, just watch the boldness of this guy. Remember, this guy's lived 38 years of hell. 38 years of hell. And now he's walking around town healed. Yeah? I mean, how do you think he felt? I mean, we get a cold, and if we shake it off, we feel fantastic. This guy's been lying horizontal for 38 years. And immediately, he's healed. Had to be absolutely ecstatic. And I think it comes out in these last few verses as we finish off here. But he answered them. So he's answering the Jews, right? But he answered them. He who made me well was the one. Put capitals under that. The one. Because in his life, this is the one. Who said to me. Isn't that incredible? All Jesus did was said to him, pick up your pallet and walk. Now you think the religious guys would have said, whoa, really? Oh, we've got a whole pile of people we need him to go to and start speaking to his healing to them. Are you kidding? Look at verse 12. They asked him, who is the man who said to you? Oh, we want his number. Because we've got this whole list of people we've got to get him to visit. Who said to you, pick up your pallet and walk? But the man who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had slipped away while there was a crowd in that place. Oh, he didn't even get his business card. Didn't get his website. Jesus just moved out of there. And Jesus hadn't even introduced himself to him. Right? Verse 14, afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you. So whether this guy, sickness or illness had come about by sin, ultimately also sickness comes about by sin, but whether there was some specific sin in this man's life, I don't know. Doesn't say. Verse 15. The man went away. And look at the next thing he does. And told the Jews. He's right up there in the face of these Jews, telling them that it was Jesus who had made him well. You know this guy had a phenomenal deliverance. To have the bravery to do that. Yeah. I love the boldness of this guy. He found the Jews. And boldly told them who it was that brought about his deliverance. Look at verse 16. For this reason, the Jews were persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. Wow. Do you see the warped perspective these traps give people? Yeah. We'll declare the kingdom truths and death to sin, living righteously, and you'll still get persecuted for it from these people. Yeah? Because you're not lining up with their trap. You're not lining up with their doctrines. You're not lining up to them. You're not filling their seats. You're not filling their plates, offering plates. Yeah? Follow the money. And we will be persecuted for it. So as we finish off here, this gives us a great insight as to where the persecution will come from. Verse 16 does that. Yeah? And why it will come. If you want to see real persecution, just do what Jesus did. Which is what we're supposed to be doing, isn't it? Yeah? Just start breaking people away from their pulls, their traps in life. And just watch the responses you'll get. So we have to be people who break away from associating with the Bethesdas, yeah? The pool structures of life, and open our hearts to the words of our Lord, regardless of the price we have to pay. Amen?